Our guest this morning is Serge Ben-Hayen. I've had the pleasure of knowing Serge for the past 8 years and the privilege of interviewing him on Bay FM twice before, last January and a year ago in May. Both of those interviews are still available on Serge's website at universalmedicine.com.au, and I don't think we'll be covering any of those topics today. Many Bay FM listeners will also know Serge through his healing work at his clinic in Ganilabah, his heart chakra workshops around the Northern Rivers, his books, or perhaps through attendance at the School of Livingness, which has been running the last 4 months here in Byron. I could take the next 5 minutes to introduce the many facets of Serge and still not get them all covered, so let's just get to the real deal. Welcome, Serge.
Welcome, Gail. Good morning.
First, a great big thank you on behalf of the Bay FM listeners for coming in this morning. You have a schedule that's hard to believe. How is it you still have energy to give so generously day after day? I mean, you've been doing this for going on a decade now.
Yeah, I remember when I first started doing the work, I was always lovingly advised that I could burn out, because that's one of the things that most of the healers suffer, the burnt out healer or the burnt out practitioner. But if I look after myself and lovingly apply basically all that we present, then I find my body is living everything that we say it does. And I sleep 4 hours a day, which gives me the ability to get everything done that I do.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Whenever I get an email from you, I always look and see what the time is, just checking on you. Now, one of the things I'd like to talk about this morning is the School of Livingness, which is also known as the Arcane Project. Now that we know how it is, you have the energy to offer yet another way of healing. I'm wondering why this project, why the Arcane Project?
We started about 3 years ago. We did a 2-year stint where we presented the Sutras of Patanjali on a Friday evening. We did that so that we could basically reinterpret the sutras in a way that people could rehear them or re-listen to them in a way that they sounded much more contemporary. The sutras basically tell us how to live and what the hindrances are that allow us not to live in that truth. So at the very beginning of the sutras, they say, for example, that we are already the sons of God and that we live that truth within us. But we are surrounded with everything around us that doesn't allow us to be that. So deep inside us is the essence, and all around is the cloud, if you will, that stops us from getting to that essence. So we decided to bring out new sutras by way of fiery sutras and by way of teaching people through white magic how energy actually works. And by doing that, we can actually help everybody dissolve their own miasma that surrounds that essence, so that they can start to actually truly live. We call that the livingness, which when we come from the essence, it doesn't take energy away from our body, which is why I live only 4 hours of sleep.
Right, and I've noticed during the last Arcane Project, specifically last Friday night, because it's this time of year where people are starting to cough and sneeze and we're all bringing jumpers and scarves, and so it looked like there was 200 people in there again last time. And as we were starting, even after you started to speak, there was all this coughing and sneezing and shuffling, and of course it's an echoey hall. And then you took us into a meditation, and within literally minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, the noise level had just dropped to practically nothing, and then it remained that way for the rest of the evening. So can you explain what's happening there in such a short meditation that people are just stopping all that noise?
Firstly, from an energetic point of view and from a healing aspect, coughing, sneezing, burping and yawning are all releases of energy, and it's a way in which we can get rid of excessive energy. And also when we're processing, it's a way for the body to discard. It expedites the process. But when people come to a gathering like that, they usually accelerate their own processing simply by being around others who are also in that emotional space. But when you take everybody back to the essence, the imposing energy that we feel from other people and our own imposing energy isn't there anymore, and therefore there's no need to process as such, unless, of course, we choose to process. In other words, we actually choose to release something as opposed to it spontaneously leaving because of the amount of excessive emotional energy we are carrying. So by taking everybody to a very, very simple process of connecting to a gentle breath, they're able to connect to their essence. And if you can feel, and as you felt in those meetings, suddenly the temperature changes, the fastidiousness disappears, and everybody is at ease because there's just no imposing.
So I propose to you that we experiment with doing a little meditation on air this morning. Now, we'll set the listeners up. This Serge is going to talk us through a meditation. It's not a long process the way that Serge does it. Do you think we need to put any caution out to people who may be driving cars and listening to this?
If you're driving, I wouldn't deeply go into it. But there is a sense of participating in the process where you can still stay very, very conscious. It doesn't elevate you to anything else. It just takes you into a deeper awareness of yourself. So it's not dangerous.
So you can still be just very aware of driving the car.
Absolutely.
Okay, Serge, so is there any other setup you think we need to give this before you talk me and the listeners into getting centered?
None whatsoever, because it's very, very natural and we can all do this.
Over to you.
Thank you. So what we need to do now is just really just close your eyes. Obviously, if you're driving, you don't do that. And that just basically stops the world from looking at you, and it takes away all the fears and doubts and mistrust that you may carry. And the next step is really just to actually choose to breathe in gently. To actually take the time to choose to breathe in gently. Making sure that that next in-breath is gently inhaled. Once you've given yourself the opportunity to do that, continue to make that a focus at the very tip of your nose. In other words, choose each and every in-breath to gently enter through the very, very tip of your nose. Whilst we're keeping your focus at the tip of the nose, the next thing is to choose to be gentle. In another way, you can exhale or breathe out gently. The key here is to not breathe out softly, but very deliberately gentle or gently. Remember to keep your focus at the tip of the nose, breathing in gently, and now breathing out that gentleness. And as you bring out that gentleness, also exhale and allow the body to depress itself. In other words, to allow itself to become gentle as you breathe out, observing that the gentleness of the shoulders, the chest, and the lungs also become gentle as you exhale. And that's really it. There's no mystery in meditation.
Let's let them rest there for a minute.
Focusing on the in-breath, making sure that it is gentle. Allow the music to carry that gentleness. breathing out gently. Once again, allowing the music to carry the gentleness of your being out. And allowing the music to wash the body gently so. As you exhale, let go and allow yourself the opportunity to be gentle.
It's 8:46. You're tuned to Bay FM 99.9. I'm Gail Q, and this is the title track from Chris James' CD, Silk in the Clouds. You can get more information on the music and Chris at chrisjames.net. We're talking this morning with Serge Benhayan, who, among many things, is also the executive producer on both Silk in the Clouds and Chris's latest release called Fiery Eyes. Serge, let's talk about the definition and the difference between fiery energy and pranic energy, because these are terms you use often.
Yeah, these are very, very important terms and definitions that we need. It's equivalent to understanding the difference between the spirit and the soul. I class knowing pranic energy and fiery energy equal to knowing the difference between spirit and soul.
So just in case we have listeners who haven't heard your previous interviews, give us a brief definition of spirit versus soul.
The spirit is the light that separated from the soul to create its own existence, a lesser existence in the sense that it became much more tangible in the way it uses its five senses. And the spirit is today what we know ourselves as the human being. In other words, the spirit not only separated from the light of the soul, and then that light then became a much more physical existence, which we call today the human being. So the human being is made up of the human spirit, and it has its more tangible conscious personality.
And the soul remains?
The soul remains the light of God, the Son of God, and it remains the body of love of God. And the idea is that we need to, on earth, ground that oil, that soul energy into our body and redevelop ourselves by the light of that so that we can have an expression on earth that comes from that body and not the separated body that became the spirit.
Okay, so now back to pranic energy and fiery energy.
Okay, so in order for the spirit to have an existence or a medium or an environment upon which it can express itself in that separated form, it had to create an energy or an environment, that energy is actually called etheric energy, or it's called pranic energy, both meaning the same things. The pranic energy is basically a lower or lesser vibration of the original light that we come from that actually supports a life of separation. So everything on earth has been created first and foremost from that light of separation in the human sense, even though all of nature was originally created from the light of love that comes directly from God. The idea is to coexist with nature so that nature can re-impulse us back to that divinity. But unfortunately, we impose on nature and often it succumbs to our ways. Now, the fiery energy is the direct light that we were originally made from. It still has our essence and it still lives within us. But the pranic energy, or the light that the entire, for example, spiritual new age or religion is made from, comes from that pranic light we often refer to as gut feelings, or that energy we feel with emotions. And these are the energies that are actually affecting us. And until we realize this, nothing will truly change on earth.
So through the meditation process, like you've just talked us through, that is pulling us back into a more fiery energy, or returning us to.
Correct. It gets us to understand the essence that is already there without all the miasma that is surrounding it. And as we get more and more into the essence, we start to realize that light that is untouched by everything, that it's not suffering, that there's not aching, and that it's not confused and not full of ill knowledge, but that it has its wisdom and has its love and harmony and joy. The meditation basically introduces the fact of that feeling inside us, and then the more and more we connect to it, the more it starts to expand and shows us itself the truth.
Okay, so is there any middle ground? Is there neutral energy? Are we either pranic or fiery? Do we have a grace period in between?
Unfortunately, or fortunate to those who know, there is absolutely no such thing as a neutral ground in energy. And, we 8 years ago when I started to say you either harm or you heal, people started thinking that I was a little bit too harsh and not being quite, and not being neutral in my way. But if you understand energy, you can either be pranic or fiery. And you can never be in between. And no matter how benevolent, ideal, or idealistically one holds a belief, if they are pranic, it is still pranic.
Yeah, that's one that, you know, we just don't want to hear, do we? I mean, we think, well, if our intention is good, we're trying to do the right thing, that we hope that that's a fiery energy, but that's not always the case.
That's correct. You used the word there, try. We try to do the right thing, but when we try to do the right thing, when we try to idealistically plan something for good, for the better, or have even benevolence as its grounding seed, we are always doing so from what we have learnt does not work. In other words, we are rebounding or reacting from something that hasn't worked, and therefore we idealistically choose an opposite or the most furthest extreme from something that hasn't worked. But we are doing that by shifting one energetic thought or idea that we thought was good but now failed, and then using that same energy to recreate another rebound that will eventually demonstrate itself to fail, because we haven't actually shifted the energy that's producing the thoughts that gives us the ideals or beliefs. Is that too complicated?
Well, no, I get that. Now, but I always like to give real-life examples for people to understand these things, too. So off-air, I was asking Serge if he thought Chris would mind, Chris James, if we used him as an example. And the only reason I would suggest that is that Chris quite publicly talks about this himself. Last weekend at the Big Sing, he was demonstrating it on stage for us. And also the fact that Chris, who many of our listeners will know for years and years as a fabulous musician, has pulled all of his back catalog of his CDs. He's not producing it and he's not selling it because it no longer feels to him that it's a fiery energy, and he's wanting only his two most recent CDs out there. So do you want to elaborate on that a little bit, Serge, to give them that example of somebody who thought he was out there healing the world with big things and then discovered it maybe wasn't so?
Yeah, it was never an instruction of mine for Chris to pull out any of his CDs from his catalogue or anything like that. It was never any imposing instructions or even in suggestions. When Chris started to record from that essence that we spoke of earlier and started to realise that sound wasn't just about its perfection through the ears, but through its quality in the heart, he started to realize that 20 to 25 years of his work was all about producing quality of sound, but never changing within what the essence was true in him. So when he started to connect to the essence and realize that his voice changed, that the quality of his writing, his lyrics, and the way he played the instruments changed, he realized that all that other music, whilst it sounded terrific and whilst it was very popular and whilst it brought him a great income, was now classified as pranic and therefore directly affecting and hurting other people. And that's a truth that Chris came to by his own volition.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big wake-up call, isn't it? Now, this is going to be true for probably all of us who are still in human form, that we're going to discover we've been operating from a pranic state most of our lives. And even as we try and become conscious of becoming more fiery, we're still spending a lot of time in the pranic, and gradually, hopefully, that will shift more and more to fiery. So how do we keep from beating ourselves up about the fact that we have been pranic, or that we still spend a great deal of time being in pranic energy, that leads to separation?
Yeah, one of the glamours that the students or students of truth or even the early esoteric students fall for is the beating of oneself up as a result of realizing where they have been and what energy they've been producing things with. But the idea is to not beat yourself up at all. It really is just to stop and with clarity realize where you are. Be truthful and honest in your integrity and your approach to every day or every moment of your life, and then just go about recreating. And as you recreate, you actually offset everything that you've left behind. There isn't a karma to pay, or there isn't a debt to really account for. It really is just about expressing. Once you know the difference between fire and prana, it's about reestablishing yourself and then go about producing that fire. It really is just about being in your essence in everything that you do. So if there's a solicitor writing a report, if there's a lady at the cashier, at the checkout, at Coles or Woolworths or somewhere like that, it really is about being gentle when you process the shopping goods. Or it's about being in your gentleness when you write a report, sign a check. It's very, very, very simple. Mm-hmm. It's about where you are at any given time in anything that you do.
So another definition of being in fiery energy is about being in your essence.
That's correct. It is. It's that simple. But there's a difference between the essence of fire and the essence you've come to know yourself in the suffering and in the emotional way of being.
Right.
We normally refer to those as gut feelings, or we refer to those as our inner feelings. But unless you truly clear yourself of emotion and begin to feel, now feelings is just picking up energies without actually reacting to them. So when you stroke a cat, for example, you feel its coat. And that's a feeling. There's nothing wrong with that. That's being in your essence. But if you feel the cat and then pick up on the fact that perhaps you haven't been stroked, you haven't been loved, the cat is softer than you are, or the cat is missing this, or the cat is hungry, then you are starting to react beyond what you're actually just feeling. That's the difference between emotion and a feeling.
Uh-huh. That's great. Well, I'm aware we're giving out a lot of information. I'd just like to get one more thing in, and it is also around semantics and definitions, misinterpretations and all these things we do with words. And just the word fiery in itself tends to make most of us probably think of as being hot or heated energy. But I notice, actually, in group settings of large groups of people, like 200 again, as we return to our essence, return to the fiery energy, the temperature actually drops, and pranic energy is the hotter of the two.
There's a difference. The fiery energy is actually the hotter of the two.
Okay.
But it's a very deep, warm, gentle energy that doesn't excite you or makes you uncomfortable. The pranic heat as in Chinese medicine they know, is actually a very uncomfortable explosion of excessive energy reacting to its stagnation inside the body. And therefore it comes across as a hotter heat, but it's not. It's just that it's more imposing, and therefore its nuisance creates a focus which we get uncomfortable with. But the actual fiery heat is actually, in terms of temperature, much more gentle, but definitely much hotter.
Okay, so it's probably much better for us as individuals physically to also be in our essence and in our fiery heat, take the incinerator factor down on our internal organs. And I've heard you make comment about this being a contributor to global warming. Do you want to say anything on that?
We won't do it in this program in a big way, but I will say that eventually man will realize that the excessive nature of our emotional way of being, which incidentally has increased tenfold in the last 3, maybe 5 years, is contributing greatly to a global warming as a result of the excessive pranic heat our body is giving off. Now, you may not think that that makes a big difference, but when you get a couple of hundred people in a hall, and at the very beginning, everybody is coming in with their daily chores, their daily issues, and perhaps their monthly or yearly or lifetime conditions and dilemmas, you really tend to feel easily the excessiveness of that pranic heat, which is extremely uncomfortable, which we're emanating or emitting into the room and in the atmosphere, and that contributes tremendously to the warming of the room, which becomes uncomfortable. Now, nature also receives that, and we impose nature with that type of emanation, and also interrupt nature's own rhythm in reestablishing itself within the rhythms of Mother Earth, and therefore the weather gets affected. But we can cover this, if this is an interest in your listeners, we can cover this in a great way, because the skin, our skin, is actually called the third lung in Chinese medicine. So if we are breathing out our emotions, we are actually emitting a substance into the air that we don't want, and that is the pranic heat that is actually contributing to a lot of the global warming.
Thanks, Serge. You're tuned to Bay FM 99.9 Community Radio, the art and the heart of Byron Shire. We're speaking this morning with Serge Ben-Hayen, the founder and director of Universal Medicine. Serge has a clinic in Ganelabah where he does offer private sessions, but please be aware that he has a very busy practice, and it looks like you might have to wait until October at the moment to get a private session. He also offers workshops in the Northern Rivers, Sydney, the UK, and coming up this year, new, Vietnam. So with so much to talk about during this interview, we won't be covering any of the workshops or the clinic work. So if you'd like more info, you can get that from his website at universalmedicine.com.au. Serge, you've said that being comfortable with ourselves, we give others permission to also be comfortable with themselves. If we present in stillness, it allows the energy around us to become true. And you refer to this as presenting nothing more than our essence. So I just wanted to get you to expand on your use of the word essence.
Yeah, as you know, I've been always involved or pursuing energetic integrity. And to pursue and live by energetic integrity must also understand the energetic meaning of all our words. So, for example, you can't have two people and one say, my essence is this, and another essence is that, when one's essence is pranic and the other essence is fiery. The true meaning of the word essence is fiery, your fiery nature. So we need to understand that the person referring to their essence and only achieving a deeper level of their own pranic state of being is in truth not in their essence. That person, while they may be soft and candid and well-spoken, articulate and so forth, may come across with all that splendor, but in truth they are still harming because they are expressing and their voice carries the pranic energy. So it is very, very important to understand what essence is. Now, essence is our living stillness. It's that very, very still, deep within that we have within us, and everybody has it. what we need to understand or come to terms with is, in all honest and in all truth, we just don't give ourselves the opportunity to have that stillness. And our body, even though we sleep at night, is in constant motion. So it's important to understand, to give ourselves a stillness so that we can understand what that essence truly is. And therefore, when we say, let's connect to our essence, we understand what our truth is. And so that if we come from our truth, we will never impose on another and therefore allow them the opportunity to come to their own truth. It's really what we've all been craving for ever since we were young, that ability to be met, to actually really truly be seen. Now, to be seen, it really means to be met. In other words, to be felt by one's essence and not imposed upon, to change that essence so that you can become something that another wants you to become. In other words, you are allowed to be who you truly are and are comfortable being it.
Hmm. Now, is it possible to be led astray by a false essence? Is that duality within us, that we could be confused by what we think we're in our essence, but there's actually a false essence in us that's going to pull us off center?
Yeah, that's something that I've also been presenting for the last 8 years, not always with popularity, because it really does expose the whole gambit of where we can be taken by that false essence. And gurus, spiritual teachers, those best-selling books, the cards, the clairvoyancy, all the courses and workshops that are involved with pranic energy give us a more refined versions of prana or pranic energy. And therefore the person comes away feeling or believing that they've achieved some form of refinement or even discardment of an old emotion that they're trying to get rid of. But in truth, all they've done is buried the excessive nature of the prana and brought out a more stagnated version, which gives off a slighter emanation, and therefore they are still in prana, but the explosion of the excessive nature of that prana is still imploding deep within them. The outfall of that is that they are actually kept further and further away from their essence. And so the truth of what they actually went out to get from the book, from the guru, from the teacher, from the whatever it is that they were into, was actually not got at all. And in fact, they come away sometimes or often much worse off by not actually being given that truth of essence. So there is a false essence, and mm-hmm. we've got to be very, very careful with that essence. And that simple meditation that we did, which is really just a gentle breathing exercise, can, not at first, but eventually lead us to know our own essence, which we must know if eventually we're going to deal with our own karma, because we need to understand that everything we do must come from that essence so that we don't add more prana to the world. Prana is actually the measure or the units that we measure karma with.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard you say that before. And this is great. I'm getting to clarify. I mean, I go along and I'm trying to get all this. And so that last bit about the false essence that can lead us astray, I always get a little kind of nervous or down at that point, because I think, oh, how am I going to know? How am I going to know? And so there's a couple of things you've referred to that allow us to know. And one is the law of correspondence I've heard you talk about. But is this the same as clairsentience?
Yeah, the clairsentience is one of the tools or units of expression of the more encompassing law called the law of correspondence.
Oh, okay. So clairsentience is a tool within the law of correspondence. And so could you expand on that for the listeners?
Yeah, the law of correspondence is the science that allows us to feel everything that is in accordance to the rhythms of God's in and out breath. In other words, that which comes in a simple way, it's that which emanates from your heart is basically the law of correspondence. Everything that is in accordance with that heart is corresponding to its rhythm.
Versus the mind. Okay.
Correct. So the heart, by all means, uses the mind, but it uses the higher mind once it has established energetically what is before it. And therefore, when it applies thought, it is applying thought in response to what it has already energetically felt. When we don't allow ourselves to feel first and then think, what we are doing is we are being bombarded by the energy that it's imposing on us. We don't stop, instead we react, and what we say is a thought in reaction to the energy that has intruded in us. And therefore, clairsentience, which is the art of knowing the difference between a feeling and an emotion, and eventually it is the art or science of actually classifying energetic imprints, which is everything. Therefore, with clairsentience, we can get to know everything and by its truth.
Thank you for that very valuable tool, which we all need to be using. So clairsentience is the art of distinguishing between feelings and emotions.
Correct. It is the ability to clearly feel, clair meaning clear or clarity in French. So it's the ability to clearly feel.
And feel by using all of our senses?
Feel by using every single one of our essence, our five senses, but it happens first by receiving the energetic imprint, which then gives the five senses in the physical sense and the five senses in the etheric sense their truth. If we don't have a truth to begin with, those five essences, senses actually lie to us, because they're actually responding to a false energy and not the truth. We've seen that before, where you can have three people lined up to observe something, for example an accident, and each give you a different story about what they thought happened or what they saw happened or what they felt happened. And if they are all reacting differently to what happened, each and every one of them has the five senses recording a different episode of what was in fact actually happening.
Right.
That's an example.
Now, what do you think about needing to improve ourselves or our souls? I guess we wouldn't need to improve our soul, because it always stayed connected to the light and it's whole and complete as it is.
That's correct.
So what about the need to improve ourselves as human beings here on the planet? Is this something we should be striving for?
One could say, idealistically, we need to improve ourselves, and I'm using the word need lightly here, without emphasis, but we need to improve simply just to make the world a better place. Now, I don't want to go into that mushy type of idealism, but we do really need to, first and foremost, take responsibility of our own karma, and we can only do that by expressing with fire. That's our first and foremost responsibility. The world will take care of itself once we start all emanating and expressing from our essence. So, in truth, the need to improve ourselves first and foremost starts with the fact that by improving ourselves, the rest of it will take care of itself. But in this day and age where illness and disease is just rampant, and the need for pharmaceuticals is now proportionally way out of control and still on the rise, we need to say, well, do I really want that type of life? Do I really want that type of lesser existence where I'm totally relying on things that are making me numb and distracted to what I truly am feeling, or reclaiming my life and giving it its true fullness so that I can have the true meaning of wellness restored, the true meaning of vitality restored, and the true meaning of joy and harmony living within me, and not needing to be distracted or numb simply just to feel that I'm being happy only because I've been taken away from my aching and suffering.
Okay, thanks, Serge. I'd like to come back and talk about that just a bit more. It's 9:15. You're tuned to Bay FM. We're talking with Serge Manhayon. Serge is the author of two books to date. He's currently writing books 3 and 4 simultaneously. I swear this man does not sleep. He says he takes 4 hours a night. I'm not sure. His most recent published book is called A Treatise on Consciousness, and his books are available through his website at universalmedicine.com.au, or Abraxas is still stocking them.
Abraxas, the Mullen Bookshop, and Noah's Ark as well.
Good, thanks. Now, let's introduce them to the term white magic, which is something that's referred to in your second book, for sure. I'm not sure if it's in the first one. Everyone probably has an understanding of what, or thinks they do, of what black magic is. So what do you mean by white magic?
White magic and white magic is really just the configuration of energy at play. In other words, it is God's divine rhythm at play. And there's a science that can measure, study, and know, through the law of correspondence and clairsentience, how that configuration actually works. When the divine way of living expresses itself, that energy configures itself through any medium, and that expression, that configuration, can be studied on the subject called white magic. So black magic is actually the converse of that. It's the configuration of the prana at work. It's not really any dark or sinister. I mean, anybody can, if you rouse on your children, that's white. That can be black magic. But if you're being firm with them at the time that they need to be spoken to in that way, that can also come with white magic. So the idea is not to get too hung up in the black magic and white magic, mm-hmm. as we know it from books and witchcraft and Hollywood movies, but to understand that it's just really just the configuration of energy at play or at work.
So white magic would be harmony and black magic would be disharmony.
Correct. That's the simplest way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. So there's so many places to go in this interview, but I'm trying to stay focused, but I want to take a small little deviation into black magic in the terms that one night I heard you refer to the computer as the greatest tool of black magic today. And I just wanted to explore that a little more because I know people have this full-on relationship with their computer, and to some degree I'm one of them. I don't know how to live without a computer anymore. So could you expand on why you would say the computer's one of the greatest tools of black magic or disharmony?
The greatest tool of black magic to date had been, or up to recently, had been basically our voice. Because if we speak from an emotional point of view, the configuration of the energy that comes out from us is in fact black magic, because it's disharmonious. So if you substitute the word black magic for disharmony, mm-hmm. it makes it easier, an easier subject than to attach it to the voodoo, the black magic and all that comes from Africa or Brazil or Hollywood movies. So the computer now has taken over almost equal, or equal, let's say, it's taken over, because more and more people are communicating less verbally and using the computer much more.
Right.
So the email has taken over the phone call, and it's taken over the letter, and a lot of people are really just jotting down a few lines rather than picking up the phone and speaking to another. So the computer is no different to us speaking, and it's no different to the phone, and it's no different to writing a letter. Everything is energy, and everything has energy in it. So the computer has substituted our voice, and therefore it has become one of the greatest mediums of black magic. Let me say that again so that it's easier to listen. It has become one of the most prolific forms of disharmonious communication. If we put it like that, then most people will relate to it. We've all opened up an email that has impacted on us or affected us. And we know those, no different to the way in which we receive a letter or a phone call that has its impact on us. And we have that after effects in an emotional sense, we're up or down after the fact. But what we need to understand is not only are those direct emails affecting us, but everything on the website, when we look at it, what we're looking at is the energetic state of being of the person that posted that window on the screen. And so not all websites are clear. Now, this doesn't mean you have to stay away from the computer. It just means that you must be aware that this is going on. And therefore, as you stay centered, still, or in your own essence, none of that can actually affect you. But if you're open, down, in disregard of yourself, or perhaps emotional, and in a sense out of control, then you are being bombarded in the same way that you would be by a telephone call that is being disharmonious.
So again, I guess if we work on being in our essence all the time, not just when we're with other people or other living objects, then it's about staying in our essence, even with an inanimate object like a computer. And then we can sort out, well, one, we're putting good energy into the computer, but we can also steer ourselves away from those emails or those websites that aren't of integrity.
That's correct. First and foremost, we should choose or want to be in our essence for ourselves, because it is a truly magnificent way of being, and it restores everything that we know ourselves to be, or everything that is ever idealized that we could be on earth is easily accessed by connecting to our essence. And again, as I said earlier, when we are in our essence, every time we click the mouse and press send, and that email goes out, that goes out with harmony. if we are in our essence. Every letter we write, every check we sign, everything that we do that comes from the essence begins to offset the excessive amount of prana that we live in the world. Most people have always heard of the fact that the ageless wisdom says there's no such thing as perfection, that all we can do is be as good as we can be. The reason that there is no such thing as perfection is because the amount of prana on earth far out exceeds the fire. So even a very deeply committed and living esoteric student, you know, esoteric meaning coming from their innermost, will at any time during the day be exposed to the excessive prana, and therefore there's no need to be thrashing ourselves because we fell off our centered perch, simply because the amount of prana is too big all around us. Mm. For now, that is.
Right. Oh, there's hopeful news. Let's go back to the Sutra of the Living Energy. Serge, I've heard you say that energetic truth of all things is measured by our bodies. So even if we don't think we know the truth of something, say in our conscious everyday mind, our body knows it in our unconscious. Or I guess I'm needing you to clarify. I'd just like to hear your definitions right now about conscious, unconscious, and subconscious.
Yeah, I'll come to that. Just before, I'll just clarify that we can speak all we like, we can promote and talk about idealistically and through belief systems all we want to say, but ultimately it is our body that will tell us whether we've been in truth or not. And as you've heard me say over and over again, and I present this also overseas, we have had exposure for the first time since 1972 to more alternative medicine, complementary medicine, and in addition to that, the wonderful way in which medicine itself in its scientific form has expanded to now become such a great modality for us all on earth. But it makes absolutely no sense that we've had all these great improvements and advancements, and yet the cancer rates are going 1 to 4, 1 in 3, diabetes every 12 minutes, every woman dies, every 9 hours a woman dies of ovarian cancer, according to the fundraisers. And it makes absolutely no sense that we've improved everything, and yet our bodies are telling us otherwise. Mm-hmm. So what we do in presenting the Arcane Project through the School of the Livingness, and what energetic truth is actually saying, is what we need to do is come to a point where our bodies are actually emanating or emulating what we are actually saying. In other words, if we've come to all these improvements, we shouldn't have an increase in disease. And therefore, true improvement will only come when we become soulful, not when our mind improves its thoughts. We need to change the energy in our body so that it becomes fiery and we stop living in the prana. Now, that's part A, so I'll come mm-hmm. back to the prime question. And our consciousness is really just the collective thought forms of the personality. It is what is always there. They are formed as a recall from our normal everyday existence which we call our tangible reality. The subconscious is really the collective thought forms of the squillions of lives that the spirit has lived and reincarnated time and time again on earth. So that's the difference between consciousness and the subconsciousness.
Okay. And then if we're unconscious, we're just...
If we're unconscious, we're really just choosing to ignore the reality and letting the subconscious basically take over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now back to this. I'm interested in exploring the physical crisis we find ourselves in, like you say, with all the improvements and all the alternative modalities. The disease and illness rate is just escalating, and the figures that are in relation to depression alone and the use of Prozac is staggering. So how do you relate? Our spiritual crisis is very much connected to our physical crisis.
All illness and disease comes from the spirit. It's the spirit that is time and time again, or lifetime after lifetime, reincarnating under the same energy. And the spirit will never, ever, ever be able to heal itself unless it renders itself naught and becomes part of the light that it's separated from. In other words, the pranic spirit must render itself naught and enter or allow itself to become once again the light of the soul. When it does that, it will no longer be a spirit, but actually become part of the soul as one. And that's really, we can keep improving surgery, our medicines, and I'm pro-medicine, I'm pro-pharmaceuticals, I'm pro-complementary and alternative medicine, and I'm behind it all, so long as the practitioner is not pranically imposing or pranically practicing that, because otherwise all they're doing is getting a result, which we call managing the body, but is not in true healing, because the prana has not been changed to the fire, and therefore no true healing is occurring. So a cure is not a healing.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the articles that Serge forwarded to me in an email this week was around the issues of the physical crisis, and a new term I hadn't heard before, which was ecotherapy. And it's about people actually, the simplest mode of lifting depression was to go out and take a walk in the country. Now, not only is that interesting, but 71% of the people that took a walk in the country reported that they felt less depressed. But then they also took a group of people for a walk in a shopping center. Did you see what those statistics were? Those who took a walk in a shopping center, which now does happen a lot in the Northern Hemisphere, especially in the winter when the roads are icy and they're worried about slipping. Of those in a shopping center, 45% felt less depressed versus 70 in the country. But 22% actually felt more depressed, and 50% felt more tense, and 44% said their self-esteem had dropped. So walking, that we think is such a great therapy, is great in the country, but it looks like walking in a shopping mall is not good for your health.
No, and the 45% that you mentioned there, would a shopping center tends to distract most people from their own depression anyway. So whilst others are feeling the effects of so many other people who are there in and under the same impulse, in other words, to numb and distract themselves, come away more impounded by the same emotional mental energy that is being released. But we must face the fact that for a lot of people, shopping has become a need as a result or as a form of distracting oneself and therefore numbing themselves from what is really going on, when alternatively they should really just get what they need, occasionally reward themselves with a nice gift or two. But predominantly if they go for a walk, that walk itself will connect them more to themselves, because the busyness is not around them, and that starts to bring them slowly, even if there is resistance, back into the essence, and that's why the depression seems to be lifted.
And we're so blessed to be living here on the Northern Rivers, where we've got all this great fresh air and miles and kilometers of beaches to walk all the time.
Yeah.
Speaking this morning with Serge Menheyan from Universal Medicine. You can get more information on his website, www.universalmedicine.com.au. Serge, kind of a totally unrelated question, but one I ask a lot of my guests, is what is your understanding of tribes or soul groups? And I guess I'm wondering if we reincarnate in waves of soul groups. And I don't know if it's the same question, but it's, how do we end up with the people we end up with? Like, who we hang out with? The tribe.
Yeah, that's a big question. Have we got another hour?
No, you might have to come back again.
Okay, done.
Give us a short definition.
Yeah, first and foremost, there's no such thing as soul groups.
If anyone
talks about a soul group, they don't understand the difference between spirit and soul, and basically the information is coming from a spiritual-based knowledge, which again is pranic, and therefore not in truth, in other words, false. All souls are the same. The soul comes from a soul consciousness, and each and every soul is equal. They are the same height, they emanate the same energy, they know it all, they are the body of love, and they are connected to God no more than any other soul. Spiritual groups, on the other hand, are different. They are usually gathered by the law of attraction or the law of magnetic pull. And so what you do spiritually, or what you need to learn from a pranic sense or a pranic point of view, usually gathers you in the types of groups that are looking for that same learning or if you are involved in, for example, rape, murder, crime, and so forth, you too are also attracted to the same spirits that are stuck over many lives in that same emotional turmoil that allows them to express under that ill expression, which we call murder and rape. So the spiritual groups, the parents that you incarnate in, your relatives, the friends you accumulate over each and every lifetime, is largely based on the quality of your spirit. And as you get closer to your soul, the type of friends, the type of people you meet start to change. But that can also occur if you change the quality of your pranic energy. If it becomes more dense, if you start to do drugs and alcohol and so forth, so too do your spiritual friends change, or your contacts change by the quality of the prana that you are now attracting towards you. So it is a great question that you ask, but we need to do away with the twin flame, the soul mate, my everlasting partner. Anyone who meets another in their essence is in effect meeting each other from a soulful, and you can have that connection with anyone. If you've ever lost someone you believe is your soulmate, you were really not in truth connected to their soul. You were really just deeply emotionally connected to their spirit, because everyone has a soul, and you connect to their essence, you can find God through the meeting of another's essence.
Thanks for that, Serge. Now I'd like to, I'm afraid we're into kind of the wind down, the wrap of this interview. We do have a few minutes, though, so don't feel rushed. But I'd like to get your thoughts on living in truth, which is something I feel I'd like to strive for, and most of my friends as well. So just some words from you on living in truth.
That's something that I try to live by as well. When I say try, I use again the word lightly, because it's not about trying at all. It's actually about allowing yourself to live in truth. And so the more you allow yourself to live in truth, which really means to allow yourself to come from the essence more and more, it really is just about that. And there are days where you just cannot find that essence, no matter how hard you look. And those days you just have to refocus back on breath and let them be. Sometimes what we discard or what we're processing is too big for us, and it's difficult to find that gentle breath. And then there are days where we are deliberately choosing to ignore that essence, and that's where we've got to catch ourselves. So really living in truth is to bring ourselves back into that essence that will demonstrate to us the harmony and the joy, and then from there we can construct ourselves to live in that energetic truth, or living in truth. But it really isn't something we need to flog ourselves with when it doesn't happen. You just let go, you say, oops, and then you just go back into the gentle breath and bring yourself back to the essence. It's really, really simple.
And I think it's important to use the right terminology to invite that to happen, rather than trying or struggling with it, but just allowing the livingness of truth to be in us.
Yeah, that's correct. If you use the word allowing, you are basically affirming that the essence is already within. If you're trying, it's something that you're trying to achieve from that is outside or out of your reach. So really it is about allowing, because it's already there.
Thanks, Serge. And what about the wonder of God, which is how you conclude your second book, The Treatise on Consciousness, is with words on the wonder of God?
Yeah, it's something that I playfully indulge, if I may use that word, or playfully play in, if I can say. The wonder of God is beautiful, and I cannot say enough about it, and if I rant about it, I'll just alienate people. It's the wonder that God can send many, many things your way that are within the rhythms of how something, I'll give you a brief example without blowing my own trumpet. I was upstairs in a two-story building, really sitting in the toilet, and just near the window I noticed a bee. And I thought to myself, what's a bee doing this high? I mean, there's no flowers or anything like that. And the moment I asked myself, what is a bee doing here? And then I asked myself, what does this mean? The words came, recognition of a fellow hard worker. So it's these experiences that give us, for example, if you are by yourself walking in a bush or with others, and you're speaking not about anyone, but speaking with joy, it's not uncommon for a butterfly to appear in and around you. And these are parts of the wonders of God. Now, the same message can be given to us in the converse of that, of course. We can attract other messages that are showing us that we're not in that. But the wonder of God is really about little checkpoints in life that show us how we are, what we're doing, and how we are going. And it's a real shame that we've lost that, because we live so stringent, so closed off, so discarded, so distracted and numb, that we forget to connect simply by breath and bring these rhythms toward us, that we can have that message by a butterfly or a bee or any other form of nature.
So it is very important for us all to connect with nature, to really be able to experience that wonder of God in a first-hand way.
It actually helps us restore the connection to God, because at the moment the connection to God is really just idealized, and it's something people have to work hard for in their mind, when in truth God is actually living within you and your essence can expose that very easily. But because there's so much horrible stuff going on in the world with war and disease and illness and so forth, we tend to subconsciously blame God. And that's something that's been going on for a long time. We basically say, who hasn't said, you know, if you're true and if you're love and if you're all these things you're supposed to be, why are you allowing the world to be the way it is? And we've got to understand free will and the fact that we are the sons of God, and we have a choice whether to make things in accordance to the impulse that we naturally are, which comes from our essence, or we can choose to separate from that essence and then create things according to how we think they should be, which is what we've been doing for a long, long time. So the Treatise of Consciousness, our second book, basically says you can either be in and with the impulse of God, or you can separate and be in and with the impulse of the pranic consciousness, which is what's been giving us our whole mess ever since we separated.
Well, I think those are good words to leave our listeners with, Serge. Great big thanks for coming in this morning and sharing your healing wisdom with the Bay FM listeners, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
I love coming in. I love sharing that with your listeners. I can actually feel them being with us when we present, and anytime you can ask me back, I'll be here with bells. Thank you.
Great. Yeah. If we can get you back from around the world. So I hope to do it again soon. Bay FM 99.9, Serge Ben-Hayon from Universal Medicine. Serge Ben-Hayon is the founder and director of Universal Medicine. The essence of the work that flows through Serge is in line with that which can be called sacred and esoteric by nature. It's non-traditional, following no allegiance to any cult, form, or belief other than that which is found intuitively at the heart center, in accordance with the spirit of the hierarchy. No claims are made other than the stance that the work, like all other before us, should always be ascertained by the individual to be the work of truth or not. He communicates sacred teachings through esoteric healings. Serge offers private sessions, workshops, and is the author of two books to date. You can find out more about Serge at www.universalmedicine.com.au. You can call his clinic during business hours, 6624-3706.